This podcast is brought to you by IFR Magazine. This is Jeff Van West of IFR Magazine. Recently, I spoke with Paul Devlin, product manager for WSI, Datalink Weather Products, and Bob Dreisward, senior VP of R&D, Forecast, and Customer Services for WeatherWorks. I wanted to better understand how the products worked, as well as get tips for pilots using the systems. Both WSI and WeatherWorks apply three levels of processing to the NEXRED image during that 8 minute or so lag before it hits your cockpit. Each company has its own secret recipe for this, but the overall structure is the same. Here's WSI's Paul Devlin.
WSI's three level of quality processes includes the first level, which is mosaicing all of the different individual data streams from the NEXRED sites themselves.
And by mosaicing, you mean putting all the sites together into a single image covering the country? Is that the idea?
That is correct. And there's a little skill that you have to have there in terms of managing the differences in the schedules. Each of the sites are on different schedules, if you will. And so when you stitch it together, it's not simply just taking the image and putting them next to each other. The second level of quality control is algorithms and processing, in which we go in and start removing automatically things like anomalous propagation and other artifacts that come with the NEXRED product. You know, NEXRED is very sensitive and can pick up all kinds of things in the atmosphere and can also be affected by temperatures and inversions. And you basically be looking at the ground instead of actually real radar returns. My favorite is, I love to tell this one, my favorite is WSI has a patent on removing death rays from NEXRED imagery. And what a death ray is basically when the sun is at a certain azimuth, it basically blinds the radar site, and it looks like there's a huge line of precipitation that goes from the NEXRED site and points directly at the sun. And then third, we have degreed meteorologists who are always watching the product and improving the product as it's published. So if the military drops chaff, for example, that will show up on NEXRED, and you know, our folks can go in there and remove that, and they do, and they have a very specific set of tools in which they edit the images as they're being published all day, all night, all year long. By the time NOWRAD comes out of the process, it's a much cleaner image than you would get, say, if you were just looking at a raw NEXRED image.
And that 8 minutes is enough time for that third step of human beings to go through and scrub the image for the entire country?
Absolutely. We've been doing this a long time, and we have quite the process set up so that it's basically a full-time job, and that's really what those people are there doing all the time.
If you've flown with cockpit NEXRED for any length of time, you've noticed there are differences between what you see on the average website and what you see in your cockpit. And sometimes there are differences between what you see on the screen and what you see outside the window. Here's Bob Dreisward talking a bit about why these differences exist.
Let me start first and foremost by talking about our mosaic, our radar mosaic. We create this by integrating the latest base reflectivity NEXRED radar products from every NEXRED site across the country at 5 minute intervals. This process analyzes all the tilts of the 1 kilometer reflectivity for the highest intensities at each radar site. This results for us in a composite of the maximum intensity found within all elevations of the radar scan. So we're picking out what the maximum intensity is by using the base reflectivity products from all tilts. And why is this important? We believe this is important for aviation purposes because an aircraft may experience precipitation at many different elevations during its flight course. By contrast, Jeff, most website radar products simply show a single site radar image, or the mosaic they create just shows the lowest base reflectivity tilt, not all tilts of the radar volume scans.
Does that mean that somebody flying along could see, you know, a moderate level of precipitation on their screen, but they're flying along at a lower altitude where the range just isn't reaching and they're in the clear? Is that why that happens occasionally?
That's correct, because we're looking at each radar produces, they take a cut of the atmosphere at different elevations during the volume scan. So that lowest volume scan may not contain the heaviest precipitation echoes. They may be further up in the atmosphere. So we're taking the maximum intensity throughout that entire cut of the atmosphere. Thus, you could be flying through something that isn't precipitating as hard as maybe the next rad leads you to believe. I think the biggest concern for pilots is they need to realize that radar coverage is not 100% across the continental U.S. And for instance, radar echoes or radar coverage out west is far more sparse than it is across the eastern two-thirds of the country due to just the space in between the radars and because of the terrain. So it's important for pilots to understand that out west there could be precipitation that is occurring and not being detected by radar just because of that limitation. The radar may be too far, may be blocked by mountainous terrain to actually see the radar echoes. So it's important for pilots to understand that and to use some of the other tools that are provided, such as the satellite data or the lightning data. They may be indicators of precipitation in the area where you're not necessarily seeing it or not seeing it as strongly as what would be indicated by what's actually occurring.
How does your system identify the location of storms and calculate their movement? I've seen, you know, the skits, I believe you call them, on the XM display, but how is that calculated and what kind of limitations are there that a pilot should keep in mind?
We have developed over the years some patented technology that generates these skits, and skit stands for storm cell identification and tracking. And our processing is different than what you may see from others or from the National Weather Service. The same core data, the radar data, is used, but the storm attribute information from the National Weather Service has two deficiencies that we believe. First and foremost is that it's the skit is generated for the centroid of the cell and not for the actual threat of the cell. And secondly, that skit information from the Weather Service is available at the end of the volume scan and not at the beginning of the volume scan, which is that 5 or 6 minute delay. What we do is we actually do that processing internally here. We actually calculate a skit ourselves based on the actual threat location, that threat location being a hail core or a possible tornadic signature. We're identifying the threat, not the center of the storm. And secondly, we do we create the skit after the first two tilts of the radar are retrieved. Thus, we can get a skit generated 5 minutes earlier than what's available from the National Weather Service attribute table. So that's a key difference between what we provide and what you may see elsewhere.
Now, I've flown around with skits visible, and I found them to be, you know, in general, very accurate and pretty consistent, although every once in a while it seems there's one that suddenly disappears and then reappears or makes an about face or at least a 90-degree turn and then kind of returns. Why is that? What's going on there?
Usually we'll see deficiencies in the skits during a developing convective situation. As a storm is developing, it may give the impression that it's moving east or west, but it's actually developing in that region and not actually moving yet. So I think that's the one thing that pilots need to be aware of, is that in a developing storm situation, when storms are just developing, that the skit may not be as accurate as it will be after the storm has developed. And also a secondary is that during a situation where there is weak steering currents, there's the storms are moving very slowly. At times, you will see the skits move in some very odd directions, and it's usually based on how they're developing, not on how they're moving.
Now, can a pilot take that piece of information that the skit is showing multiple directions of movement, or does it seem to be consistent, and say, "Wow, that's a developing area. The other NEXRAD information may not be accurate yet, or that's an area that's gonna get worse, and I should stay away from"? Or is that not a leap you can make?
No, I think it is a leap, and I think another thing a pilot can do is they can actually loop the information within the cockpit to discern for themselves which way things are moving. They can take a look at the upper level winds that we provide in our product to look at which way the storm should be moving.
I asked Paul Devlin if he had any other tips for pilots using not just NEXRAD, but cockpit weather in general, and he had a couple great suggestions.
So something to keep in mind for everyone is that the convective SIGMETs issued by the National Weather Service are extremely accurate, and they should always have the convective SIGMETs depicted on their display, if at all possible, when they're flying. So that's a resource that some folks might discount, but they really shouldn't. So there's convective signals. Pay attention to those. What I think our product does really well is that we have a very good indication of what's called gradient. What the gradient tells you is how fast it goes from light precip to heavy precip. So the shorter the distance between light rain and a torrential downpour, that's what you would say is that it's a steeper gradient. And what you find is that with very steep gradients, you have severe turbulence associated. If you think about it, if there's an area where there's none or just a light precip, and then there's an area right next to it where there's very heavy precip, what you'll get is you'll get extreme shear in and around that area. So folks have to keep in mind that a gradient is a clue that will lead you to that, you know, unseen threat of that convective turbulence, and you want to stay away from that. Storm height is a proxy for storm strength, with a caveat, which I'll give you in a moment. So the higher the storm, generally, the more severe you're talking about. But storms in the upper Midwest are not as high, but as intense as higher storms in the Southeast. And that has to do with the fact that the tropical pause basically comes closer to the earth at the further north you go. So a 25,000-foot storm in the peninsula of Michigan, you should take very seriously. It's a real deal, right? As that might be analogous to a 45,000-foot storm in southern Florida. Another rule that we like to tell folks is that if you're looking for where the storms are moving, besides, of course, being able to play a loop of the NEXRAD imagery and doing your own sort of mental procession of where that will be going, or interpolation, you can look at the 10,000-foot winds. Generally speaking, winds at 10,000 feet are where the storms are heading in that area. Strong storms will veer to the right of that, but in general, the 10,000-foot level winds aloft will give you a good indication of where things are heading.
This podcast has been brought to you by IFR Magazine. For more on IFR, log on to www.ifr-magazine.com.